You're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today's a bonus episode for the month of May. If you recall, in April, we did 4 bonus episodes, and that took a toll on me. I'm not going to lie. that was a tough go, all right? So we're back down to the 1 bonus episode a month, which I know you appreciate. You're on the supporter feed. Supporter feed means you're not dealing with those pesky ads anymore, and you're getting all these bonus episodes, and you're loving life. But no, seriously, thank you. I appreciate it. You're keeping this podcast alive. Thank you very much. Now, today, this one's going to be a quick banger. This one is like, it's equivalent to getting flash art tattoos, okay? It's kind of like you're on your lunch break, feeling like a bad boy or a bad girl, maybe. And you walk into the local shop and you're just like, I don't know, give me the bulldog with the spike collar. That's what this is, okay? We're going to talk about the UFO / UAP congressional hearing that went down a couple weeks ago. Old news at this point. The news cycle's very rapid, right? So much has happened since then. It's almost an afterthought, but I have all these notes. I actually watched the entire thing. It's 90 minutes, the perfect length. It's the perfect length for a movie. So I watched it. And wow. We got a couple things to talk about. Because a lot of people dismiss this. A lot of people, even my main man, Dr. Anteater, who's my number one source for cool thoughts on stuff like this, he was kind of like, I don't know, dude. It seemed like nothing was really going. I was like, okay. So if in passing, you probably thought this was a big nothing burger, and we're going to go through main ideas of this hearing, and I'll prove to you it is a little mini something burger, a little mini something, all right? So where do we start? Oh, by the way, there's no video on this one today. I'm not doing a video because I'm in a hurry. I already published the Doctor Strange 1 analysis, and Doctor Strange 2 analysis is rapidly expanding. I think it might be 2 episodes or 1 really long episode. There's so much to research, so I can give you some interesting ideas. Like, for instance, we've got the Scarlet Witch, right? And we all know that is the Scarlet Whore of Babylon, the Scarlet Woman, who ushers in the end times and the apocalypse. Now, you already know that. You're a great listener. You're staying woke out there. You already know the deal. So I got to give you more than that, right? So a lot of research is getting done behind the scenes over here. But I wanted to get you a bonus episode out for May. I wanted to knock this down. So we shall knock it down. Let's go. Now let's talk about what this was. The House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence met to talk about this new task force, this newly elected task force on researching UAPs or UFOs. I like calling them UFOs. I'm not falling for their rebrand propaganda. I'll call them UFOs. But the point was, this was the first meeting in 50 years since Project Blue Book that was going to go down publicly. And the Congress there, they wanted to get a status update from the Pentagon on this new. This is the third iteration of a UFO task force, by the way. It's called the, where's the name here? It's called the Airborne Object Identification and Management Synchronization Group, the worst acronym group ever. How do they pronounce it? They pronounce it AIMSIG. They drop the O from the object. It's called AIMSIG. Previous to that, it was ATIP was the big one that everyone knew about. That's the one with Lou Elizondo was the director of. That's when this whole thing blew open. But the reason there's a third iteration is because back in November 21, So just, you know, what was that, 7 months ago, a memorandum from senior Pentagon leadership was sent and signed by the Director of National Intelligence establishing this task force. And the purpose was, due to safety of flight issues and national security concerns. So they started this task force directing the Under Secretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security. That's a guy named Ron Moultrie. We'll talk about him in a second. And he established this new task force. All right? Because if you recall, June of, I think it was 21, Congress released their big UFO reveal, and it turned out to, and we did a whole show about that. It was 9 pages. It basically said, yeah, here there was a couple hundred sightings. A bunch of them are unexplainable. We need money to research this because it could be national security threats. So that set up this new task force. All right. Now, the opening remarks were done by a guy named Rick Crawford. I don't know who he is, but he was wearing an EOD pin, which is a familiar job series for me. I was an ammo troop in the Air Force and got to work with the EOD guys and girls a couple times. So that's pretty cool, right? Pretty cool. The framing of the whole meeting was clearly all about national defense. There were some grumblings about China and Russia. So there's already this like heavy military angle they're setting up for the UAP task force. And they actually make, he makes a really good point of saying, like, look, we in Congress and the Pentagon and the military, we're good at talking about what we can explain. But we never talk about the things that we can't explain, which is the crux of the issue here. And that's a fact. That's a fact. That's how it goes. So he turns it over to Ronald Moultrie. And Ron Moultrie, he's a, if you look at his Wikipedia, he's a former CIA intelligence agent, a Russian linguist. Which makes me wonder what the angle is that they're taking on all this. Is this a Russian threat? Is this Russian technology? Ron Moultrie is the top Pentagon intelligence official. And what I do think is strange is that because I've been casually researching UFOs for the last, you know, 11 years now, the RT, Russia Times, that's the state-ran news media over there in Russia, they've been talking a lot about UFOs over there over the years. And, you know, again, lots of question marks, but no answers. So Ron, he proceeds to define the unexplained aerial phenomenon, UAP, because, again, they're pushing the propaganda, right? They got to, that's the first stage of propaganda, is to rebrand all the terms. So they're rebranding. They're like, no, UFOs, we made those people seem crazy. We can't say that anymore. We've got to call it something different. So people say, oh, well, that's, yeah, I can get behind that. Because people are sheep, right? We know this. But Ron, he talks about how, oh, you know, this task force, they're going to do this scientific analysis. And, you know, if there's adversarial platforms, we might have to mitigate that. Or it could be other natural phenomenon. But either way, he says that removing the stigma of UAPs, aka UFOs, is very important because they want people to report this stuff now. Which it's almost like we're replaying the same thing that happened. Because back in the day in Project Blue Book, they wanted people to report this stuff too. Then they debunked almost all of it. You remember the swamp gas thing? J. Allen Hynek. But there were some that they couldn't debunk. But overall, their stance was kind of like, I don't know, it seems crazy. If you see any UFOs, just call the UFO hotline and they'll help you out. We're not investigating it anymore because it seems like nonsense. So then they turn it over to Scott Bray. This guy is the Deputy Director of Naval Intelligence. And he gives status update. He's like, look, there's subject matter experts from all over that we brought in. Metallurgists. They bring in metallurgists. That's a hot ancient aliens term. So you know they're, Giorgio Tsoukalos is on the case. And what's the other dude's name? What's the dude's name? I always do his voice. Oh, how could I forget his name? You know, the guy that talks like this. The guy who seen the aliens down in the Mayan ruins. Down in Chichen Itza. That guy. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, they talk about how there's different... They put these reports. They've got about 400 reports. And they'll put them in different bins. And one of them is what they call the other bin. The other bin. That's where the juicy UFO stuff goes, all right? And they play an example. They play that, if you've ever seen the creepy video of the flashing triangle on the night vision goggles, green screen looking video, it looks like a three-dimensional triangle, like a pyramid out there floating around, flashing. And they say, like, look, we kind of didn't know what this one was. And they played two of them. But then they almost debunk it without, you know, fully saying this is debunked. But the one video, they say, this is an artifact of the night vision goggles. So it's not a flashing pyramid in the sky. It's just an artifact. Then they start grilling Bray and old Ronnie over here. And a guy named Carson asks Ron if he's a fan of science fiction. That's right. That's right. That's what they asked this guy. In the midst of all this technical, high-level reporting, rigid, formal talk, out of left field, he asked Ron, the guy running this whole thing, if he's a fan of science fiction. And he kind of defends it, like, yeah, I like science fiction. I'm a normal American. You know, I don't necessarily dress up. But it's a weird left turn. Actually, I want you to hear it. I grabbed the clip. Take a listen.
Can we get some kinds of assurances that your analysts will follow the facts where they lead and assess all hypotheses?
Absolutely. So we're open to all hypotheses. We're open to any conclusions that we may encounter.
Quickly, before I pass it to the ranking member and Chairman Schiff, I want to thank you both for taking the time, and I had a good time meeting with you last week, Director Moultrie, Undersecretary Moultrie. It's fair to say that you are a science fiction fan, is that correct?
It is fair to say that I am an inquisitive mind who has spent 40 years in the intelligence field and has focused on both science and science fiction. That is fair.
Could you tell us about it?
Yeah, well, yeah, look, my generation grew up looking at space sagas and the Apollo program. So all of us who grew up in the 60s were just thrilled by watching our first astronaut land on the moon. That was a momentous occasion. To people who were of different generations, some of them didn't believe that it happened. I still have relatives and friends who don't believe it happened, right? Science fiction to them. But to us, it was, no, that's the progress that we've made. And so I was enthralled by that, and I've taken that to heart. I enjoy the challenge of what may be out there. I have mentioned to you that, yes, I have followed science fiction. I have gone to conventions, even. I'll say it on the record. Got to break the ice somehow. But, you know, I have done that, right? But there's nothing wrong with that. Don't necessarily dress up, but I do, you know, I do believe that it's important to show that the Department of Defense has, you know, we have character, and we're people just like you, just like the American people. We have our, our inquisitiveness. We have our questions. We want to know what's out there as much as you want to know what's out there. We get the questions not just from you; we get it from family members. And we get them night and day, not just in committee hearings. So finding what's out there is important, But first and foremost, it's important for us to do that so that we can ensure that our people, our personnel, our aviators, our bases and installations are safe. And then that curiosity factor is something else that that we just want to know, because that's the human race. It's just, you know, that insatiable desire to know.
It's such a hard left turn that I thought, that's really bizarre. And it's really strange to me, because if you read my two Alien books, you'll know that's kind of the argument I've been making, is about how science fiction ultimately will create reality. Because I think if you want to zoom out on this whole thing, there's an occult understanding, using the occult sciences, there's an occult understanding of our world. And that they can create reality through manifestation of thought, through ritual magic, all these practices, right? Jack Parsons was doing that stuff. Aleister Crowley was doing that stuff. And our, you know, intelligence, Pentagon, military, government, whatever, were investigating this back when those guys were doing it. And they knew that there was some truth to all this. So that's why they started all these MKUltra type programs to research the powers of the mind, Project Stargate, all this stuff. Because they knew there was some basis of reality that this stuff worked. And in my books, I'm talking about how if you look at people like Wernher von Braun from NASA, the Nazi scientist from Operation Paperclip that came over and ran NASA, you look at him, you look at Jack Parsons, these guys very clearly stated that they were inspired to go to the moon based upon science fiction from the pulp magazines that had science fiction tales. Which, oh, by the way, who created the pulp magazine? Who created the paper that they called pulp? The guy who ran the Ordo Templi Orientis. It's all connected, I think. So I found it very curious, and I thought, I wonder if that dude read my book. Because I think what he's asking, ultimately, is, hey, man, are you trying to make this stuff real? Are you trying to find a way to make this stuff seem real because you love aliens so much? I think that's what he's trying to say. So Ron, he keeps on pushing, and he says, this is where things got real interesting to me. And I didn't hear anyone really talking about this. I didn't dig too deep into what people were saying about this. But Ron implies that there was some underwater activity. And he basically says, we're going to go more into that in the classified part. Because, let's zoom out again. So the public got to witness the first 90 minutes, and then there was another, I don't know, hour, 90 minutes, whatever, that happened behind closed doors that was classified so the public couldn't see it. So Ron says, yeah, there's some underwater activity. We're going to talk about that in the classified section. So major key alert, right? Major key alert. He also says that they had 144 sightings over the last year, and 18 of them had some unknowns. And Schiff, I think is how you pronounce it, asks if that's an adversary thing. And Bray says they simply can't explain it. So what is that, 10% or actual maybe UFOs? And Bray's kind of like, well, all we can do is collect data, calibrate assumptions. That's some good office jargon BS. I'm going to calibrate some assumptions. I'm going to do a little modeling and simulation. We've got to model and simulate. We're gonna forecast for a 90% improvement rate. Oh, man, the dreaded day job oozing out of my pores. Because that's what this is all about. You know, and that's one thing I learned. Because I don't know if you know this, but I have a dreaded day job. I went through a lot of college and misery for the dreaded day job. Got a master's degree from Penn State. And I'm probably doing them real proud by turning around and being a conspiracy theory podcaster. So as part of that, And because, you know, my journey, let's get personal. You're on the bonus feed. You're not those free feed losers. We like to get personal. You know, when I started this whole thing, in 2011, I started the blog, right? IlluminatiWatcher.com. I started the blog literally as something to do because I was in a 1 year lull between getting my bachelor's completed and starting grad school. And I was just so used to researching and writing and presenting and stuff. And I just did it. I don't know. I was like, well, this is a cool thing to do. I'll make a blog. Everyone's blogging. So I did that. And over time, it built a following, right? Started podcasting in 2014, writing books this whole time. It was just something fun to do on the side. That's really all it was. And then in 2020, everything changed, right? I had already started my Patreon or whatever, but things weren't blowing up yet. But then 2020, everything changed. And I don't know if it was the pandemic exactly. I noticed it when Kobe Bryant died is when I noticed things changing. Because I did a bunch of shows on Kobe Bryant and they blew up huge. And then that audience increased. All my audiences across everything increased. And I thought, wow, this is crazy. And then I sort of ran with it and, you know, did Tinfoil Hat like 10 times. So shout out Sam Tripoli and the fellas over there. I think they helped me increase the audience. And the whole time, right, all these years, you know, I completed grad school in 2013, I think it was. I graduated. And I moved up. I was doing systems engineering, which is kind of like program management. And as a program manager, you got to prepare these slideshows and graphs and charts and defend what you're doing. You know, you're spending the big boss's money. And one thing I noticed is they did not value, in the corporate workplace, they did not value my brutal honesty. Because I would say stuff like I would point out the unknowns. I would be like, you know, I'm not so sure about this thing. You know, just like on the podcast, right? I tell you flat out, I'm like, look, I don't know if that's what this means. This is just what it, there's some information here that looks like it could go that direction. And I noticed that another guy, a different program manager, was having all the accolades thrown at him. Getting little gift cards and little presentations and little rewards. And I thought, what has this guy got that I don't? Didn't have the education, didn't have the background. And I took an honest look at it and I said, you know, it's because he's more confident than me. And here in America, we've got some real toxic masculinity, cowboy bullshit fantasies. They think, this is my experience in the corporate workplace, they value a guy who can get up there and bullshit them and be like, we're going to meet the deadline by X, you know, by June 1st, you're going to have this product or whatever. Whereas a guy like me would get up there and be like, the plan is June 1st, you'll have this product. Here's the problems that I've got. I can't control how fast this guy does this thing. I can't control how fast that guy does that thing. There's all these pieces that got to come together. They don't like that. They look at it, and to be fair, like, I don't totally disagree with them, but what they want is the guy who's like, you don't worry about that, buddy. I got you. June 1st, you're going to have the product in your hand. They like that. That's confidence. And I don't disagree with that. So that's a good balance you got to have of how much do you shoot this confidence BS at them versus telling them the honest truth. And every now and then, that would blow up in this guy's face. And then he would come up with some bullshit excuse as to why it didn't happen. And I knew it because I worked with the guy. I was like, come on, dude. Give me a break. I just knew the ins and outs of it. And it didn't matter. It's like, what was that dude, the propaganda of, the minister of propaganda, Goebbels, Joseph Goebbels in Nazi Germany. I think he said this something to the effect of, if you tell a lie, tell it big and all the time or something like that, right? It's kind of like that. on some level. So when you realize all this, you realize, oh my God, this is happening in every office across the whole country, maybe even across the whole world. I don't know what other cultures are like. And it's kind of shaky, man. It's kind of shaky. The whole world is a little more chaotic than we think it is. That's why all the supply chains have disrupted. You throw one little monkey wrench in it, and things just ripple and get out of control because everyone operates on this like shoestring budget of what they call it, just-in-time supply chain. And, you know, you throw one little thing in it, and boom, now no baby formula for you. Anyway, why am I ranting about that? Oh, yeah, because he said, we're going to calibrate some assumptions. Oh, boy. Anyway, moving on. We hear that other countries have UAP task forces. China's got one, apparently. A guy named Mr. Himes asks Scott Bray, he says, like, you say we can't explain. What does that mean? Is it too little data? Or is this actual organic material from another world that you can't explain? And he says that they have no material that suggests it's non-terrestrial. He says it's mostly too little data. And everything with this insufficient data goes in this unknown bucket. Now, this runs counter to what Tom DeLong and all them guys at To the Stars Academy have been saying, and even Lou Elizondo, I think. They say they've got this metamaterial, this material that's they've given to the Army that appears to be like, I don't know, what do they say, like nanoparticles sandwiched between layers that you can't even do on this Earth. So what the heck, right? This guy, Mr. Gallagher, asks about projects. He says, look, are there any other projects outside of ATIP and Project Blue Book and this new AIM-SAG or whatever they're calling it? And both Ron and Bray, they're like, nope, not aware of anything. And then Gallagher, he smashes a watermelon first, which I thought was a little inappropriate. Because no one had the plastic, right? So you just get watermelon all over your suits. I'm kidding. Working on my stand-up comedy, all right? You're going to have to suffer through. Gallagher asks about... I like this Gallagher guy, right? He says, what about the report about ICBMs getting shut down? And Bray says, look, I've never seen an official report. And what he's talking about... And I like Gallagher because he pushes back. He's like, hey, man, you're the nerds researching this. What the hell? What do you mean you haven't seen the report? Isn't that what you were paying you to do? And what he's talking about is the Maelstrom incident. And let me give you background on that. In 1967, Maelstrom Air Force Base in Montana, this is where they store the American nuclear launch facilities, the ICBMs. We're talking Cold War. Big scary stuff, right? Well, back then, a bunch of security forces and maintenance personnel, they reported a bunch of UFOs one day. There was one right above a launch silo. And the next morning, an actual alarm sounded, and it showed an ICBM going offline. And what they do is they've got all these protocols in place, because that's not good, right? We got to be on alert all the time. And they thought, oh, man, maybe just one silo's out. But then the other one started falling off. And all 10 in this, I guess, cluster went down. And they said it was due to a guidance and control system fault. But the conspiracy theory is that the UFOs did this. I mean, apparently it's a fact. All these people reported UFOs and then, boom, they go down. Which was something apparently I guess they don't see often. I don't really know. One of the security forces police quit and never returned. Must have been a civilian, I guess. Because you can't do that in the military, right? You can't just quit. So that's what Gallagher's asking about. And the nerds that get paid to research this stuff are like, I've never heard of it. really, either they're lying, because, like, why, so many questions here, right? Why would you not? You've seen the Maelstrom incident covered in, I believe it was Dr. Greer's UFO documentary he released in 2020. I don't remember the name of it. Disclosure, I think, or something like that. Sirius or something. So this isn't an unknown event. This is one of the biggest events ever. And Gallagher's kind of like, bro, you're killing me. Moving on. Mr. Krishamorth asks if there's any wreckage. He's like, look, nerds, is there any wreckage? And Bray, he says some weird stuff, man. He's using a bunch of word spaghetti. He starts stumbling all over himself. He's like, ugh. There doesn't appear to be any wreckage that isn't consistent with being of terrestrial origin. What? So I thought that was really weird. I feel like that was some kind of dodge or something. No proof there, I'm just saying. It just seemed really strange. But then we hear that there are underwater sensors looking for UFOs, or USOs, I guess you would call it. And Ron immediately is like, well, that's classified. We're going to talk about that later. What? And then we hear that some of these, you'll hear, they said something like, well, these, I'm trying to read my own notes here. It says they probably represent physical objects. And Bray says a number of them are physical objects, but some are not. Oh, okay, so he's talking about the reports, right? He's saying that some of the reports are sensor anomalies, meteorological phenomenon. So some of these reports are physical objects in the sky. Some of them are not. We're going to wrap it up here, and I'm going to go through this underwater idea for a second. Then they talk about the dangers of citizens, as you and I, pushing misinformation or disinformation from adversaries being injected into the news. Because this is a concern, right? I mean, it's a thing that happens. So they're already trying to figure out how to work that. Then finally, Mr. Welch asks about, he's like, look, there's two ideas here. We got the idea of extraterrestrials, and then we got the idea of adversaries. And Ron says, he's like, look, there's a lot of agencies already looking for ET, like NASA. And Ron says that they have to protect the sources and methods of how they collect the UAP data. Not so much the findings, though, apparently, which begs a lot of questions. Like, what do you mean you have to protect the method? Like, is that classified? Why is that classified? Where are these sensors? And that's how it wraps up. 90 minutes, end of the movie. So in conclusion, let's wrap this up real quick. It seemed like it was a big nothing burger, but if you want to get into the guts of this thing, it was actually fairly significant. Like I said, first public UFO hearing in 50 years since they had shut down Project Blue Book. And you heard at the end when Welch was like, hey, is it ET or adversaries? Which one are you guys looking at? And he's like, well, NASA's already looking for ET, so I guess that implies they're looking at adversaries. But if you recall, in my book I wrote in 2017 called The Dark Path, probably my highest rated and reviewed book you'll find anywhere, the chief scientist said, by 2025 we're going to prove aliens exist, basically. And they've got all these projects that are like probing the stars and bringing back samples from meteorites, or meteors, or whatever you call that. And they're going to do it. And NASA, they're not new to investigating this. Ryan Bledsoe, said they've been bugging his family for 10 plus years, as well as all the CIA and all these folks. So it's very strange how they want to act like they're just like, oh, we're all new to this. We don't know what's going on. Oh, I never heard of the Maelstrom incident. Really? Who's on your team, bro? Because clearly people have been researching this for a long time. Another thing, remember we talked about, he says there's underwater sensors? Why would they have sensors underwater unless they were concerned about USOs? Unidentified submersible objects. And if you recall, the late, great Bill Cooper, that was his story. He was in the Navy. I think he even worked for Naval Intelligence, didn't he? But he was in the Navy, and he saw a USO fly out of the ocean. And he always wondered if that was something he was supposed to see to sort of plant information into his brain, or if it was the real deal. I think the UFOs are underwater. Maybe, right? Finally, Politico. We're gonna finish with something interesting that we saw in the news here. They made a very curious statement. I'm gonna read you from their article discussing this congressional UAP hearing. The biggest question may be whether the Pentagon is being fully transparent with Congress. The intelligence official described another faction inside military and intelligence agencies that takes the subject very seriously and is protective of UAP-related data. Quote, they fetishize their secret society. It's kind of a skull and bones type vibe. They take it seriously, but they have no accountability. Zero. There is a whole bunch of us that know in great detail this subject, a lot of which has not been reported to Congress because of security issues. Now, this is interesting because that supports what I understand of this whole thing. There's people that have been researching this and have way more information than this task force. The task force wants us to believe they know nothing, really, and most of it's just sensor errors and they don't really know. It's just a matter of getting more data on it. But there's this secret society. When we interviewed Professor Diana Pasulka about her book, American Cosmic, which she laid out this exact topic of the secret society, this invisible college. And look, I don't want to leave you with a big question mark, but we're leaving with a big question mark. And I'm going to tell you something. I'll tell you one thing. I'm hooking up with Ryan Bledsoe. If you don't know Ryan Bledsoe, he runs a podcast called Bledsoe Said So. And his father, Chris Bledsoe, was one of the most famous alien abductees. And they have some kind of gift or curse, depending on how you look at it, of making contact with these things. And the CIA and NASA and all these folks have been bugging them and harassing them for years, apparently. So when this UAP task force sits down, it's like, oh, I don't know. Well, apparently they don't have the right people on their team. Or they're buffaloing us. They're smokescreening us. They're gaslighting us. I don't know what's going on with the UFO thing. It's still not clear. Something don't feel right, though, you know? Something don't feel right. We're going to get to the bottom of it. I'm going to interview Ryan. We're looking at June. No promises. We're going to get it done, though, soon. And it's going to be a great show. So, anyway, okay, that's it. Now you're all caught up on the UFO congressional hearing. Big to do, right? Big to do. All right, thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for supporting the show. I appreciate your support. You're keeping the lights on to keep me motivated. I'm grinding hard over here for you, trying to get things done. I got a Doctor Strange 2 episode you cannot miss. Should you watch the movie before I spoil the plot? Probably not. I mean, if you're a Marvel geek, you've probably already seen it. If you're not, you already know how these movies go. Like, there's not much surprising in them. That's my problem with it, why I don't like them. There's no thinking involved because I'm not like, well, what's going to happen? Like, I know what's going to happen. Because I'm just so smart. No, I mean, I just, they're you know, they got to serve a massive audience. They got to serve a wide range of ages. So that, you know, the more sort of specific and the more the more targeted your audience, the more of a risk you can take on these films, which is why I like the films I like. But these films that hit a wide audience, they got to kind of keep everyone happy. When you serve multiple masters, no one's happy, right? Okay, All right. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to the show. Till next time, stay woke.